time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
I've got something on my mind again, bothering me a little bit. I want to talk to you about it in a constructive way. Can we be sober-minded without being sensationalistic? Can we be radically committed to Jesus, alert, given over to the purposes of God, not consumed with the things of this world, without thinking the sky is falling? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Email me directly at Dr. Brown. It's drbrown at askdrbrown.org. I got a few things I want to get into today, but I'll start here, and I'm going to park here for a while. I did a show recently asking our listeners if they believe that Jesus is coming within the next 30 years. And it was a serious question. When I came to the Lord in 1971, my perspective was that Jesus would certainly come in my lifetime. In fact, perhaps any minute, but certainly in my lifetime, that was kind of a given. That was the mentality in which I got saved. And there was something healthy about it in terms of it put this life in perspective and reminded me that I was not here just for this world. But of course, 55 now, by God's grace, with many years of fruitful service ahead, if I honor the Lord and walk with Him. But I don't necessarily believe that Jesus is coming in my lifetime, and it hasn't caused me to run my race with any less intensity or focus or fervor or passion or devotion. After all, it's one life, and then you've got to give account to God for that one life. But here's what gets me specifically on today's subject. Can there be sobriety without sensationalism? I fully believe that right now we are in somewhat of a birth pang. I talked about that last week, that there's a lot that's happening. It's a season of shaking. It's a season of intensifying from the things happening in America to the things happening around the world, to people talking more and more about the end times, and it's all unfolding. And if Jesus came in my lifetime, that would be extraordinary and wonderful. But I just get concerned that it seems we have to go from crisis to crisis and the latest exciting headlines and even sometimes misinformation to keep us sharp and focused and with a cutting-edge mentality, whereas that should be the case whether Jesus was coming in 10 years or in 300 years. I mean, the New Testament calls to be sober and to be vigilant and to wake up and to live, recognizing the times are not dependent on how close we are to the return of Jesus. Oh, there are certain things that should specifically come into play the closer the end comes and the clearer it is that it's all about to come down around us and that Jesus' kingdom is being advanced in glorious ways and we can look up and expect to see him coming in the clouds. But let me give you an example of why this particularly was on my mind. Oh, by the way, and not talking about sensationalism, but something to make us sober. Did you hear the president's Father's Day proclamation? If not, stay tuned. You will hear it in a moment. And this is certainly another area of serious concern. Okay. I get an email sent to me. It's actually come a couple times, the most recent one by someone involved in cutting-edge Christian media. And there's not only shocking things, oh no, look at what Islam is doing, oh no, can you believe these things are taking place in America, oh no, we need to take action. It had to do with a store in Houston, maybe you got this email too, owned by Muslims, and it had a sign saying on a particular day they would be closed to honor the martyrdom of Imam Ali. And people were shocked and appalled and said, don't shop at this store. Imam Ali is one of the men who flew planes into the World Trade Center. Now, can I point out that if it was celebrating the martyrdom of someone who flew a plane into the World Trade Center on 9/11, then that would be the day the store would be closed? The celebration of the martyrdom of Imam Ali has nothing to do with 9/11 in terms of those particular flyers. Imam Ali is an early figure in Islam who was killed in really inner Islamic disputes and whose martyrdom is celebrated and honored in certain parts of Islam. It's a holiday. Now, does that lead to a concept of Islamic martyr terror? Does it feed the fires of that? Oh, that's a whole other issue. And I'm not arguing that point, but that's not what the email was about. The email was telling us that Imam Ali was one of the people who flew into the World Trade Center. You know, and I see those things. I've got one from a dear friend and just shot a note back clarifying the issues here. But it seems that we need that type of stuff, that type of sensationalistic, even misinformation type of stuff to keep us focused and locked in and really living for Jesus. Whereas that kind of stuff is almost immaterial. Do you hear what I'm saying? Islam wants to make advances in America. Yes, there are things that should concern us. Yes, we raise the alarm here about other social and moral issues, often talking about the dangerous effects of gay activism while caring deeply for homosexual men and women. We talk about these things. We need to see what's happening around the world. Yes, I believe we should be looking at what's happening with Iran and Israel and how the world continues to attack Israel in the media and in other ways, and the rising tide of anti-Semitism. Yes, we should be concerned about those things. And yes, whatever shaking's taking place in America is of interest and concern to me. And yes, we have a natural disaster to deal with the oil spill, and who knows how that's going to play out, how big of an impact that's going to have. There are lots of areas of concern. But, you know, every day, thousands of kids are dying of starvation around the world. Every day, people are dying of diseases that could be treated around the world. Every day, people are dying without Jesus because folks have failed to witness to them. Aren't those things more urgent? Aren't those things of greater concern than the latest sensationalistic headline? 866-34-TRUTH. Look, I got a book some years ago. I believe it was entitled The Layman's Guide to Biblical Prophecy, something like that. I was just looking for it the other day. We're trying to get some of my books that have been in storage out in a library room that I have at our offices, and just stacks of books. I couldn't spot it, but I think I may know where it is, at least in what general part of the stacks to look for. And when I was reading this, there was one article years ago when I got it that really got my attention. It was about end time prophecy working its way out in World War II. I've mentioned this several times over the years on the air here, that people really had things worked out in terms of Hitler and Mussolini and the revived Roman Empire and the destruction of the Jews, and this was surely the end. This was surely the fulfilling of prophecy. Surely the return of Jesus was absolutely imminent at the door. And but that was over 60 years ago. Most of you listening were not born, including me, when these things were taking place. And yet people had figured it out. Now, was that a terrible time for the world? Absolutely. Was that a critical time in world history? Absolutely. Were we right in saying that this is a major trauma for the world? Absolutely. Were we wrong in saying these are the clear signs and Jesus is about to come? We were wrong. Leaders were wrong. Christian teachers were wrong in thinking that. So can we be sober, friends? Can we be vigilant? Can we be focused? Can we run our race with perseverance? Can we live in the light of eternity without thinking the sky is about to fall? I think it discredits our witness to the world when we're so constantly looking for the sky to fall. Now look, if things unfold in such a way that the sky is falling, hopefully I'll be one of the first to acknowledge it. But thus far, it hasn't happened. And thus far, we continue with a massive task ahead of us, the Great Commission. Hey, I've got one other question for you. We often broadcast from different locations on the road. I broadcast last year from India. I'm hoping to broadcast live later this year from Israel. We've broadcast before major debates while on the road, talking to you right before we get ready to go out and do a debate. Just wondering if you benefit from shows like that, or if it's just much more important to hear me ground it in the studio every week. Just curious for your take. Had some interesting discussion with folks about that. You can call in with that at 866-34-TRUTH as well. When we come back, Obama's shocking Father's Day proclamation. Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you as always. Been talking about, can we be sober without being sensationalistic? Do we need the latest headlines to prop us up and to get our attention? Or can we live sober, vigilant lives because Jesus is Lord, because we're passing through this world only once, because the consequences of our actions are eternal, because there is a dying world, because there is a devil out to destroy people? Isn't that enough to keep us sober? 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, later in this week, I've got some special teaching I'm going to be doing. One of the days, I'm going to talk about sorting out different end time beliefs. I think this is really going to be helpful for you. I'm going to talk about the different types of end time beliefs that there are, from dispensationalist premillennialists to historic premillennialists to postmillennial to amillennial. It all makes sense to you. But then I want to take away from that key things where I think different end time views have certain truth, key things that we should and must hold to. Also tomorrow, I'm going to be doing an interview with a gentleman involved in Jewish outreach, a Jewish believer who also works part-time on our staff answering Jewish-related emails. He just got back from Israel, where he was part of an outreach after an Elton John concert in Israel. So tomorrow, excuse me, is a great day for Jewish-related, Israel-related questions. And all right, let me get right to this. For all of my friends who voted for Mr. Obama, who is my president as much as he is your president, despite the fact that I did not vote for him, I want to urge you to look carefully in terms of whether you want to vote for him again based on what he is promoting, based on very, very important moral issues and values. And I warned about these things before he was elected. And to me, this had nothing to do with color. This had nothing to do with ethnicity. This had to do with issues. There have been white politicians whom I've agreed with and white politicians I've passionately differed with, male politicians, female politicians, some I've liked, some I haven't. That is absolutely not the issue to me. As I said right at the outset of the presidential campaign a couple of years ago, race is not the issue. The issues are the issues. But if you did vote for Mr. Obama, whatever your reasons for, if you do hold to moral foundational values that have made the human race what it is, one of them being families, then you need to hear this comment with real concern and perhaps express your concern directly to Mr. Obama. Here's a report. Let's see, whitehouse.blogs.foxnews. President Obama is celebrating Father's Day late this year after giving a nod to non-traditional fathers in his official proclamation. Mr. Obama is joining leaders of fatherhood groups, women's organizations, the NFL Players Association, and the National PTA, and an inner-city arts and recreation campus to launch a drive to promote responsible fatherhood and to re-engage absent fathers with their families. Kudos to Mr. Obama for doing that. And kudos to the fact that we have a non-divorced president in the White House. I think that's wonderful. I found it very distressing that most of the Republican candidates who were standing for family values and moral conservatism were divorced, some of them more than once. I found that very concerning and disconcerting. I found it to be a poor example. I'm not condemning them. I'm simply saying it was a poor example. I'm pleased to see that the man in the White House is not divorced, is not a single father, is not divorced and remarried multiple times without any biblical grounds. That's excellent. And yes, let him put pressure on absentee fathers. Yes, let him encourage responsible fatherhood. Absolutely. But, oh, please, this is just terrible. The article continues, his Father's Day proclamation said, nurturing families come in many forms and children may be raised, quote, please listen, by a father and mother, a single father, two fathers, a stepfather, a grandfather, or caring guardian. It's the first time two fathers has made that list. CBN writer David Brody says Mr. Obama is, quote, running the risk of alienating networks of pastors and churchgoers. You say, I'm making a lot out of this. This is a lot. This is big. The best two fathers in the world do not equal a mother. And having a single father leaves open the possibility of that child also having a mother. If the single father gets in relationship with a woman that becomes his wife, or if there's been a divorce and the couple reconciles, whatever the case is, there are those possibilities where two fathers say, this is a normal home. Friends, it is not good, as we are right after Father's Day here. It is not good for a kid to be raised by two fathers or two mothers. You say, oh, no, but studies show that the kids come out just the same. Can I tell you that the studies tended to present one side of the evidence and were also commonly lacking in information? Let's just say that the primary studies have been with two women, because it's only more recently that men have been seeking to adopt, gay men have been seeking to adopt children. But the studies compared lesbian moms, two moms, and they may love their kids dearly, and these two dads may love the kids dearly. That doesn't mean it's in the best interest of the kid. It doesn't mean it's best for the family. But the studies looking at two lesbians often compared their kids to kids raised by single moms as opposed to kids raised by mom and dad. And although in many social comparisons and educational comparisons, the kids were doing fine, when it came down to other issues, like their own sexual identity, like the likelihood of the kids becoming homosexual, like the questioning of gender, or what is commonly called gender blending or gender bending, uncertainty about male-female roles, increased promiscuity, those things were found in increased measure among the kids of two lesbians. Say a boy, for example, raised by two mothers will likely, those two moms will likely have a feminizing effect on the boy. When it comes to two moms raising a girl, they tend to have a masculizing effect on the girl. And when does this child ever get to see how a male and female relationship should be? When does a child raised by two dads get to see how a dad should treat a mom, how a man should treat a woman? They don't get to see it. It is going to skew their thinking. There are other factors as well, but Mr. Obama, very bad move, very sad day for fatherhood in America when you speak of nurturing families, including two fathers, and set that as a national example as our president. Let us pray for Mr. Obama, for righteousness to rise in his heart, that he might lead us in a godly way. All right, back with a whole lot more. Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire broadcast. Guana, is it something in my ears? You know when you're flying, you start to descend and your ears pop a little? Maybe. Is the building moving? Randy here, the building has not picked up and we're not flying. Boy, that's interesting. Maybe I'm thinking about flying later in the week to some ministry in Germany. But either way, are your ears popping? If not, must just be me. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let me readjust these headphones here and see if we can figure out what's going on. Okay, last week I played a remarkable quote from Tavis Smiley, where he was talking about Muslims blowing up more people every day than Christians. I just want to play this again. Someone posted on our website, and I thought it was a great job of sarcasm. As a New York Jew, I appreciate sarcasm when used properly. It can be abusive or nasty or negative, but I appreciate when it's used properly. First, let me play this wild quote again, in case you missed it last week.
The people who are engaged in terrorist activities look like you and me. They look like everybody else here. Major Nidal Hassan, the military guy who in November shot 13 of his colleagues and injured 32. He's going to be on trial pretty soon, I think this week. The young man, Faisal Shahzad, in Times Square, who tried to blow innocent people that he doesn't know up. These guys are acting on conviction. Somehow, the idea got into their minds that to kill other people is a great thing to do and that they would be rewarded in the hereafter.
But Christians do that every single day in this country.
Do they blow people up every
single day? Yes, Christians every day. People walk into post office. I mean, people walk into post offices. They walk into schools. That's what Columbine is. I mean, I could do this all day long. There are so many more examples of Christians, and I happen to be a Christian. That's back to this notion of you're idealizing Christianity in my mind, to my read. There's so many more examples, Ayan, of Christians who do that than you could ever give me examples of Muslims who have done that inside this country where you live and work.
Well, I think you and I disagree.
to say the least. You know, and the fact that Columbine was mentioned, of all things, when the killers were demented young men who were more into satanic stuff than anything to do with Jesus, and in fact targeted Christian kids to kill in the school. And aside from the fact that some person that may have had some nominal church upbringing that goes out and shoots somebody in a post office or whatever else, there's absolutely no connection to them and their faith, whereas an Islamic terrorist is doing it because of their faith. I mean, the comment's just absolutely ludicrous, bizarre. But Paul responded on the Line of Fire and said this: as a committed Christian like Brother Tavis and all the spirit-filled believers who regularly shoot up high schools and post offices, remember, I'm reading this as an example of good sarcasm, I struggle daily with the urge to go out and self-detonate. It was courageous of Brother Tavis to raise awareness of this woefully underreported problem. When it comes to religiously driven killing sprees, Christians always get a free pass, especially in the mainstream media, from the likes of the ACLU, who should really be doing more to highlight the carnage we cause each week. I've lost count of the times I'd be at a big prayer meeting and things would just keep escalating from tongues to healings to RPGs and mortar rounds. Which of us doesn't wear a flak jacket to church these days, eh? When the anointing comes, you know that it won't be long before the bullets start to fly. I'm thinking of getting in touch with Brother Tavis to start up a support group to help sufferers like him and me. Can I persuade you, Dr. Brown, to come along? I don't wish to speak out of turn, but most folks would be a bit concerned about a hulk with a buzz cut who calls his radio show Line of Fire and who does his bit for the vast military evangelical complex with an outfit called Ready, Aim, Fire. School of Ministry, I've seen the photos of you in your fatigues roaming the streets with your Kalashnikov, and I'm sure that ain't going to end well. And back on planet Earth. Thanks for the sarcastic comments. What's with the buzz cut, man? I never had a buzz cut in my life. Well, I am big. Call me a Hulk, but I am big. I'm a big guy. But anyway, sometimes that's the best way to deal with absurdities like that, is with a little sarcasm. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Feel free to differ. express your outrage, say that there is a vast winning Christian conspiracy to blow people up. You know, in church history, there have been some very unfortunate seasons, most notably the Crusades, in terms of violence being used in the name of the gospel. Of course, there was considered to be a holy war over the land, and this was Christians fighting Muslims and slaughtering each other and slaughtering Jews in the midst of it. Those are horrific things, and notice that Crusades don't take place until roughly 1,000 years after the time of Jesus. In other words, this is so contrary to anything having to do with the gospel, so contrary to anything having to do with Christian values, so contrary to anything having to do with the teaching of the New Testament, that these things only happened 1,000 years later. It is only a short period of time, a matter of centuries, over which these things happen. And I know of no Christian leader who's saying, let's take up arms to further the gospel. Yeah, we got a new evangelistic outreach in our community. We'll be handing out the bullets and the guns as we do a new outreach in our community. Yeah, we're sending out missionaries around the world, but we need extra funds for them because we need to equip them with new machine guns and bulletproof vests before they go blow themselves up. I mean, even to talk about these things is to highlight how nonsensical they are. Now, to be sure, Christians are being cut down by the sword day and night. Christians are being shot and killed and tortured for their faith, but Jesus told us to expect that. Jesus told us that these things would happen. Jesus told us, in fact, that when all men speak well of us, we should be concerned, because that's how the false prophets were spoken of. I am not out to get persecuted. My goal is not to be a troublemaker. My goal is to be a peacemaker. My goal is not to provoke opposition. My goal is to glorify Jesus. If, however, in the process of glorifying Jesus and standing for truth and lifting up his name, that opposition comes, persecution comes, attack comes, so be it. It's our honor. And in the midst of it, we glorify Jesus. But we don't take up machine guns to fight back. Let me grab one quick response. Solomon in Greensboro, we got a minute before the break, but you wanted to weigh in. Please go for it.
I can't cover what I want to do in a minute, though.
Well, we'll tell you what. Get started, and if you can stay through the break, you keep going on the other side. So why don't you get started, though?
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that Christianity is a positive concept. We won't get into heaven because of things we don't do. We will get there for things that we do, or we will be denied there by things we do. And just because we have a litany and a list of things we don't do, don't mean that we're Christian.
Ah. So you would say that fundamentally, in the statement that Tavis Smiley was making, which is very common in America, there's a misunderstanding of what it means to be a Christian. Stay with us, Solomon. You can expand on that more on the other side of the break. And I've got a wonderful C.S. Lewis quote to read. Someone posted on our Facebook page. I want to share that with you when we come back as well. Stay with us. What does it actually mean to be a Christian? You know, the word only occurs 3 times in the entire New Testament. And Jesus didn't say go into all the world and make Christians, but go into all the world and make disciples. Michael Brown, we've been talking about a bunch of things today, but just focusing for a moment on some misunderstandings of what it actually means to be a Christian. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go back to Solomon in Greensboro. Hey, Solomon, thanks for holding through the break.
Thank you. Jesus said, picking up on what you just said, that you would know my disciples by the love they show for each other, not the things that they didn't do. And I've staked out that. Now, I also want to make some comments about the gay and lesbian situation, and why we as Christians have never been able to really counter it. is because in the same scripture, in Paul's letters and the other writers, where he condemns homosexual activity, he also condemns activity that we as Christians do every day.
Mm.
So the homosexual can look at us doing those things and say, why are they picking on us? Because Paul thought those things were equal, because he said the penalty of all those things was death. And if the penalty is the same, then I'll have to assume, and I think Paul did, that the crime was the same.
Solomon, would you say then that we should just accept homosexual practice as okay? Raise our standards.
No, hold it right there. I'm not saying that.
I
condemn homosexual activity, but along with all the other things that Paul condemned.
Yes, sir.
And we don't have the moral authority to condemn homosexual when we're doing the same things that they're doing, and nobody's speaking to each other. Sexual perversion does not only happen between two males or two females.
Exactly.
It happens widespread today between males and females. And as long as we don't condemn that.
Yeah, that's why I asked you the question, because I thought that's what you were saying, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. We have lost our moral authority.
It sounds to me more like a statement than a question.
Oh, no. I like to ask a question to get an honest response as opposed to trying to lead you into it.
Okay.
And no, absolutely not. I wouldn't do that to a caller anyway. So I stand with you, sir. We are so lacking in moral authority that people can rightly say to us, the homosexual community and others, that we're hypocritical. And you're 100% right. The goal is not to lower the standard, but to say, let us live up to the Jesus standard. Thank you for calling. I'm with you, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. Jeremy in Orlando, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I just want to say it's been a blessing to hear you and to learn from your ministry.
Thank you.
My statement, I wanted to see if you could respond to some of it, but, you know, in Paul said in 2 Corinthians 10:3-4, it says, you know, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God for, you know, pulling down strongholds. What do you think, you know, that being Paul's position, should be our position in modern, politics, to approach politics and government? And, you know, obviously we render to see what Caesar's, what is Caesar's, but what should be our approach, you know, i.e. we do pray, but as far as our being an activist, what should be our approach in the government today?
Yeah, that's a big question, but an important question, and based on an important scripture. In other words, if our battle is primarily spiritual, which Paul states in other places, Ephesians 6 being a classic passage as well, then aren't we fighting a natural battle when we try to get our influence primarily through politics and other things?
Mm.
Because I got a minute before the break, I'll give you the short answer.
Okay.
We do both. First and foremost, we live out our lives to please the Lord, and we seek through the gospel to bring influence. We seek to win people to Jesus, and we seek to preach and teach the truth without compromise, recognizing that the power is in the proclamation more than the explanation. That's one side. On the other side, as salt and light in the entire society, just like a business person is going to use godly business principles, and a godly Christian in the public school system is not going to be standing there preaching all the time, but seeking to live out an example, that we do the same in the political realm, that we think through what is the best way to govern people based on biblical principles, and then present ourselves like that to serve the people. So if I'm running for office, I'm not trying to convert everyone to Jesus in the process. That's be my private ministry. I'm trying to live out Christian principles. But if we think that we can bring about spiritual and moral change through political means, we are sadly mistaken. Hey, Jeremy, thanks much for the call. And Solomon, thanks for reminding us that the world won't listen to us until we set the example of Jesus. We'll be back. You know, often when we get to the beginning of the week, there's so many things I want to talk about and cover, so tried to pack a few into the show as well. I still got a little stack in front of me. But two things I want to highlight. One, I promised I would read a really neat C.S. Lewis quote. I've seen it before, but it was posted on my Facebook page and got my attention. Appreciate it being posted. By the way, you can join us by going to Facebook if you're there and type in Ask Dr. Brown, one word, A-S-K-D-R Brown, and join us. Or, of course, go to the website. We've got a really neat special resource offer with a lot being given away this week. So go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the line of fire to find out more about that. Okay, here's a quote from C.S. Lewis. If the solar system was brought about by an accidental collision, then the appearance of organic life on this planet was also an accident, and the whole evolution of man was an accident too. If so, then all our present thoughts are mere accidents, the accidental byproduct of the movement of atoms. And this holds for the thoughts of the materialists and astronomers as well as for anyone else's. But if their thoughts, that is, of materialism and astronomy, are merely accidental byproducts, why should we believe them to be true? I see no reason for believing that one accident should be able to give me a correct account of all the other accidents. It's like expecting that the accidental shape taken by the splash when you upset a milk jug should give you a correct account of how the jug was made and why it was upset. Well said. I agree with that. If you're an atheist or agnostic listening and take exception, let us know. Drop me a line. Okay, which of these two headlines is more shocking? Are you ready? Headline one, Saudi Arabia beheads and nails murderer's body to cross. Two different murders committed. One of them, the man was executed, and after execution, his body was nailed to a cross. This is to make a public display, similar to the injunction in Deuteronomy chapter 22. The other murderer was beheaded, and there is rape involved in one of these cases. Okay, so this is one headline. Saudi Arabia beheads and nails murderer's body to cross. Here's the other headline. 8 dead among 52 shot across city of Chicago over weekend. 8 dead among 52 shot across city over weekend. Speaking of the city of Chicago, 8 people were killed and at least 44 others were shot across the city Friday night into early Monday, including a baby girl who suffered a graze wound to the neck when gunfire erupted at a near West Side barbecue. Those killed included the 28-year-old man found shot in the chest about 3 a.m. Monday. It goes on with details. A passing motorist found the man. He was dressed in women's clothing and was found lying dead on the sidewalk. On and on. Which headline is more shocking? 52 people shot across the city of Chicago last weekend with 8 dead? Or Saudi Arabia beheading and nailing a murderer's body to a cross? On the one hand, we are stunned when we hear about the methods of execution in Saudi Arabia. Beheadings bring to the 15 the number of executions reported in the ultra-conservative Gulf monarchy this year, according to an AFP count. Lower than previous years, by the way. It's a little shocking to hear of the practice of nailing someone to a cross. Of course, these things would have been done in biblical days to draw attention to penalties as well. I'm certainly not advocating those penalties and punishments here in America. But boy, our society is in all kinds of anarchy. Our inner cities are in all kinds of need. No, we don't need Saudi Arabian law, but we certainly need a revival in the church and an awakening of conscience in our society, don't we? Join us for a special interview tomorrow. We'll be taking calls on all kinds of Jewish and Israel-related subjects. Back with you then.